Welcome to Dudes on Movies, a podcast where dudes talk about movies. I'm your dude, Scott.
I'm your dude, Dave.
And today we're continuing with Horror Month with 1985's The Return of the Living Dead, directed by Dan O'Bannon and starring Clue Gulager and James Caan. But before we do that, let's talk about what we've been watching. Dave, what have you been watching?
I got to watch The Killing on the big screen.
Ooh.
Yeah, what a fun time that was, and just revisiting that movie, and it just breezes by, and I love the narration, I love Sterling Hayden's performance, mm-hmm. I love everything about that movie. My wife and I have been quoting a line from it for like 2 weeks now,
yeah.
Which is when Sterling Hayden tells the femme fatale, you know, you're a two-bit tramp who'd sell your own mother for a piece of fudge.
Oh, dude.
I mean, I'm just like, yes, what a great burn, you
That's
know?
An excellent line.
Yes.
And I think that's such an underrated film too.
Yeah.
It's early Kubrick, right?
Yeah.
So, and Elijah Cook Jr.'s in it. And
yes.
He's awesome.
I mean, he's the put upon guy who's like, you know, been bullied by his lady friend and by her, backdoor man.
Uh-huh.
And he ends up like kind of saving the day, but you know, this was the era of the Hays Code, so crime
right.
doesn't pay.
Yeah,
know?
You have to say fudge,
you
know.
That's right.
Yeah, he's an excellent, underrated, I think, character actor from that time. He's in so many good things.
Right.
Awesome, dude. And you saw it on the big screen.
Yeah,
I love that.
Very cool.
I watched something on the little screen on Netflix. It was Skinamarink. I don't know if you've heard of this film.
Yes, I have.
It's been kind of making rounds the last year or so as this... like underground, like, hey, you guys got to watch Skinamarink, you know? It's okay. So basically, if you haven't seen this movie, I appreciate what it's doing more than I actually enjoyed watching
Me
it.
Me too.
So have you watched it?
Yes.
Okay, yeah. Basically, this whole movie, everybody, it looks like it's shot on like a 1990s handycam. And every frame of this movie is of a wall or like a corner or a ceiling. And you don't see anything happening, like very rarely you do. And you just hear the action of the scene while you're staring at a wall, basically.
Right.
And it's very interesting, this concept. But it's like 90 minutes of this. And it's dark and grainy. And it's about these two little boys or kids, a girl and a boy, I think.
Yeah, girl
and
boy.
Like 4 and 6 or something. And something is happening. Like, things are disappearing and reappearing, and they're whispering in the dark, and their parents are missing, and they're trapped in the house. But, like I said, there's no action. You're just staring at walls while this is playing out. And I guess they're going into another dimension or something, or a demon is there, or mm-hmm. something's happening. There is some real tense stuff in the movie, though, despite my saying how kind of dull these shots are,
yeah.
But that's why I say it's like super intriguing, but it is kind of a little too long, if you ask me. Maybe I don't know.
Boy, it's got a saggy middle, you know.
Yeah.
Like it is tough to get through, and you're showing me images, but I don't know anything. I don't have any context for those images.
Right. And I think that's what they're trying to do. That's the intent, but
yeah.
It's like, it's just a little too much.
Yes.
And there are a few moments that are legitimately very tense and frightening.
Yeah, there are a few frightening images, certainly. Mm-hmm. Like, I mean, you know, we know the ones. I won't give them away, but
yeah.
I mean, you'll know them when you see them.
You do see things, like I said, it's not always a wall, but most of the time it's a wall.
Yeah.
Anyway, Dave, let's get into Return of the Living Dead.
Yes.
Why don't you give everyone a synopsis?
Sure. Well, this is Dan O'Bannon's foray into the zombie genre. And it tells the story of this businessman who has this warehouse, and two of his employees and their mortician friend and a group of like scuzzy 80s people, like teens, dirty teens. They deal with this like this industrial waste accident that causes a zombie outbreak, and we're gonna try and figure it out
right
in our show.
This was a favorite of mine at the video store, Dave. I would love to just pick it up off the shelf and stare at the cover of this. It's like a cartoon image of a graveyard and punk rock zombie skeletons. Very intriguing.
I mean,
compared to everything else on that shelf, this was so different.
You've seen this box art a million times. Even if you've never seen the movie, like, just look it up right now and you'll be like, oh my God, I remember that.
Yeah.
I remember that skeleton with the Liberty spikes. And, you know, I remember the guy with the with the chain going from his nose to his ear, you know, that rings a bell.
Yep, saw it at the poster at Spencer's in the mall. You know, it was everywhere.
Yes.
So this is a horror comedy, everybody. It's very cool.
Yeah, it is. It does stand out. Like, there's a lot of stuff here that you don't see in any other, like, movie about this subject. I mean, you know, there's mythology involved that like piggybacks on another movie.
Yeah,
and they even talk about the movie. Uh-huh. Like, they never mention it like by name, but they keep saying, "Oh, those guys in Pittsburgh."
Yeah,
and you know exactly who they're talking about if you're a horror hound. Uh-huh. And even if you're not, you just know about a movie that was about zombies. You
right,
know?
And I love how what they talk about. They're like, "Well, how did they kill him? They hit him in the head." And like, "Well, that's not working. You know, yeah. That's happening through this movie." And they're like, "Well, that happened in the movie."
Yes. They're really,
it gets kind of meta there. It's really funny.
Uh-huh.
But anyway, the movie kicks off. Like you said, there's a warehouse and there's these two bumbling buffoons working there, apparently. And Frank and Freddy. Frank is the elder statesman who works there. And
yes.
Freddy's the new recruit who just started.
And I, 30 seconds into the movie, I paused it.
Yeah.
Because I thought I'd rented the wrong film.
Oh, yeah.
I saw that action font, you know, that said, like the timestamp, you know, outside the facility.
Louisville, 7 p.m. or whatever.
Yes.
Yeah.
I thought I had rented Assault on Precinct 13 accidentally. Because it's the exact same shot outside a building that looks exactly the same with the same font in that movie. And I really did.
Yeah,
I paused it like, okay, it says Return of the Living Dead. Okay, got it.
Okay, good. I got the right VHS from Blockbuster. Okay.
Right.
Yeah, so Frank is it. This warehouse provides like medical cadavers for universities, colleges, whatever research.
St. Louis University Medical School.
Oh yeah, that's
right.
They
mentioned that one. Yeah, that was weird.
Yeah, so there's skeletons, there's bodies here, there's half dogs, which is a funny thing.
Like, man,
there's these, they call them the split dogs. It's
right.
A dog split down the middle, basically. So you see the. You know, it's cut open like halfway through, so you see the whole inside half of it.
It's a dog's corpse that's been like bisected and it's frozen so that you see their insides and you can
when
operate on
Frank
it.
Shows the dogs to Freddy. Freddy's like, "Oh, that's cool. Woof woof woof." And Frank says, "Hey, don't fool around, you're learning." Okay, Frank, you fool. You think you're so awesome.
I know. Frank is like the biggest work goof off, and he's like lecturing the young man Freddy about like doing the same.
Right,
and
he's got some power now because there's this new guy he's in charge of.
Right, and it's so weird too with like James Caron as Frank, because I recognized him right away as the guy who was running the investment firm in Wall Street.
Yeah,
you know, and he was so different then. I don't know what to make of this performance because like this is so off the wall and so frenetic. Whereas the other one, he was like, you know, kind of staid and dignified. This is like totally different, and he is like he's so animated here.
Mm-hmm.
Even before the sickness sets in,
right?
He's like just. I don't know. There's something about his performance in everything, even when he's doing a dramatic reading that's kind of like screwball. I love it. It's really good, but it just really took me back. It just really, I was really taken aback by it because I only knew him from Wall Street.
Right, and I love when you see a character that shows a different side of this actor.
Yeah.
You know, you get something you're not expecting.
Right.
And it's awesome. It's great. The character's awesome,
yes.
I think. So anyway, eventually Frank shows... Freddy, this like barrel. He tells him this like scary, spooky campfire tale of of how this zombie outbreak happened and the government had to cover it up. Like this is they're referring to Night of the Living Dead. Like it really happened.
Yes.
They made the movie on that, but they had to change everything to keep it secret. You know,
which is a really funny conceit.
Yeah,
you know,
right.
And I like too that, but you know. At the beginning of the film, they had the disclaimer showing, you know, like the following story is true, you know, which is, I think this might be the first one I can, well, no, I'm sorry. Texas Chainsaw was the first one, I think, that claimed the story was true and that wasn't true.
Fargo did.
Yeah.
That was years after this. So,
right.
Yeah.
Okay. So, yeah, I guess every 10 years this happens.
You know? It's true. But anyway.
Yeah, and when he starts telling Freddy the story, you know, like there's that great moment where like Freddy is so wrapped up in the story mm-hmm. that he like, you know, and then the phone rings and he's like, oh, like this.
Yeah.
And it's a big jump scare and he knocks his pencils over.
Yep.
And
the scene actually is a little tense.
It is like tense because like yeah. James Caan is a pretty good actor and he is like in this moment being totally serious about what sounds like a pretty scary event.
Yeah.
You know,
and apparently the bodies were put in these like barrels because they wouldn't die.
Right.
So they just put them in barrels, I guess. And they got shipped to this facility, and they have him in the basement. And I love this scene, too, because you don't know if Frank is, like, pulling his leg.
Right.
You know, like, this is a prank he's pulling on the new guy.
Right.
Or if it's real. So he's like, yeah, let's go downstairs. I'll show you. You're like, okay, Frank, are you setting up, like, a scare for him or
I
something?
Know.
Or like,
yeah, yeah.
Or what's going on? Yeah. You get down there. No, it's really there.
Right.
There's a barrel with a window on it, and this body is just, like, looking up.
Yeah.
You know, completely it's frozen in time, trapped.
It's a pretty scary image.
It is.
You know?
And I like it because you're like, wow, he's telling the truth. This is crazy.
Because, like, for as effective as, like, you know, James Caan is in telling the story, it's a story that, like, the veteran guy at the warehouse would tell the new guy, like, you know, to initiate him.
Right.
And then he'd go down there and go, huh, you know, and give him a scare.
Right.
But, like, no, he was telling the truth. Like, that's unexpected.
Yeah. Whether the factor that it's alive or not is truer. I mean, there's still a body
in a
barrel.
There's a human body in a barrel in the basement.
With the government stamp on it
right.
and like a hotline number. Like, okay, it looks pretty legit. The story's checking out.
Right.
And Freddy is like, hey, you know, is this thing safe? And Frank's like, oh yeah. And he slaps the side and then gas just spews out in their face. Good move, Frank.
Yes. I mean, like, look, Frank, if you know... If you've obviously known about the existence of this thing for a long time,
mm-hmm.
and presumably you've taken precautions to, you know, make sure that something like this doesn't happen. What you don't do in this scenario is start banging on the barrel, you know, like, because you don't know how fragile it is.
No.
And obviously the part that he does hit looks like it's not quite made of glass, but I mean, it doesn't look like it's going to, like, withstand your hammer blows.
Yeah. And so now we get the credits, right? And the song kicks in.
Yes.
This 80s, like,
dude,
boom, boom,
dude, this great
boom,
synth. Yes. Yeah.
It's awesome. And we follow the smoke, like, traveling through the vent system.
Yeah.
And, like, it goes into the cadaver room, and this dead body starts, like, moving around in the plastic wrap.
Right.
Pretty cool.
I've seen a lot of movies lately with, like, electrifying opening credit sequences.
Mm-hmm.
With like a synth score and like really sexy red font, you know,
yeah.
And it just don't, and it's like, you know, man, I'm just like, I hear that stuff. I feel it, I'm like, I'm at the movies.
I know. It just brings me back.
Right.
I don't know why. It feels so nostalgic to me, probably because I was a kid in the era watching these things.
Yes.
But that kind, you don't hear that music if you're not in an 80s movie.
I know.
It, like, doesn't happen.
And, I mean, there's so many people who were, like, exposed to it for the first time when they started watching Stranger Things.
Yeah.
And then they were like, well, this fucking is awesome. Where do I get this? And then they started, like, hearing Carpenter scores.
I was about to say, know? John Carpenter, like, has to be the guy who kicked this off,
yes.
right? Like,
yes.
And he wrote most of that shit himself.
Right.
Well,
I know.
It's his
fault,
that's
the man. Other thing. Exactly. Like, he was, not only did he have it in his movies, but he wrote, composed, and performed it.
Yeah.
You know, wow.
He's the man.
Yeah, he's a Renaissance man.
We need some more Carpenter on this show here, man.
Yes, we do.
Anyway, so now the movie proper is kicked off. The zombies are starting to awaken.
Right.
They go upstairs. Actually, before this, we skit a 2-minute scene of a general in, like, Arizona coming home from work. And apparently he's been looking for these barrels, like, is what you glean from this.
Yeah.
Maybe not on your first viewing.
I didn't glean it from my first
But you're like,
viewing.
Okay, so what's this guy got doing? Like, he's looking for something, apparently.
Right. I told Scott before we started here, I thought I had seen this movie, and it turned out I hadn't.
Yeah.
So when this whole thing with the general came up, you're watching the scene. It goes on about 5 minutes. And then him and his wife, they argue, and then you don't see them again until the last 5 minutes of the movie.
Yeah, they just disappear.
And you forgot, I forgot about them entirely.
Yeah.
I forgot about
them. Oh, yeah. The first time I watched it, I'm like, okay.
Yeah.
Okay, this guy's looking, he's doing something.
He's doing something,
you just forget, he's gone. I think because the rest of the movie is just so, like, awesome. It keeps you... not thinking about the general. You're thinking about these zombies.
You're wrapped
what's
up
happening.
In the story.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You're wrapped up in lots of things.
And the and I love, we have to talk just for a moment about the set of their house.
Okay.
Like, because the outside of it looks like one of the fortresses in American Ninja.
Uh-huh. Yeah. This is an 80s bad guy compound.
Exactly. Yeah. Yes. And when he goes inside, really fancily appointed furniture. I mean, like, everything is red.
Yeah.
Like, in his office, the sofa, the carpet, the pillows, everything. I mean, it's like...
This is a rich guy house.
It is, yeah. Yes. And then there's, like, rich mahogany with like, the China hutch that's got his supercomputer in it.
It's almost like a royal palace in a way. Like, it's just decorated ornately.
And the dining room, his wife is dressed up to the minute in, like, couture at 4:30 p.m.
Yep, and she's just been cooking all day for him.
Yes.
You know, of course.
Which he's not grateful for.
She says, like, I made your favorite pot roast,
I think.
Lamb chops. And yes. He goes, I had it for lunch. Yeah, you're a real nice guy.
I know. What a prick.
Your wife just, what an ass.
I know. I mean, they do a good job of establishing this guy as a real piece of shit.
Yeah, he takes no shit from anyone,
uh-huh.
And he doesn't care. Which is appropriate for what his job is, I guess, as we come to find out.
And they start arguing a little bit about, like, you know, like, when is this going to end? And apparently he's been on this mission for a long time,
yep.
where it's just, you know, we need to find whatever this is.
Yep.
We need to locate and track down something.
Yeah, he's like, it's not going to end till we find it.
Yeah.
And it might never end.
Right.
Yeah. And we don't know what that means. But anyway, that's all we get of the general. So,
I know.
Okay.
It's
bye,
all
general.
We get. I mean, exactly. Like, seriously, see you later. And when I say I can't stress this enough. It's a rare thing for any movie that I've seen where you totally forget about a character you were introduced to in the first 10 minutes.
Yeah.
Like, it's just gone from your memory.
Yeah. And it kind of breaks, like, traditional writing standards. Like, you don't introduce this guy and just, he's gone until, like, 90 minutes later for
just
1 minute.
Disregard him completely. Yeah. There would have been, like, you'd think, like, two more cutaways to their house of just, like.
Yeah. Don't forget the general's there.
That, got to remember, these people exist.
I really like that, too, that they don't, because who fucking cares? Fuck, I don't even know what this guy's doing. It doesn't matter, right?
Yeah. I guess he's just...
It's not like he's hot on the case, and that's important.
No, that's true. But he is just a type as well. I mean,
yeah.
Like, he's obviously like a... He is a military, you know, like a shadowy figure.
Yeah.
You know?
Yep. And then we meet Freddy's friends, this whole group, ragtag group of punk rocks and preppies.
They're, like, it's a weird gang that has, like, new wave kids.
Uh-huh.
Because the guy the guy in the suit looks very much like he'd be in the Talking Heads or something.
Yeah, yeah.
And I can't imagine every day putting on, like, a full suit and tie that kind of looks casual, and that's my cool kid outfit.
Oh, yeah,
I mean, that would be a lot of work.
That guy looks like Tom Cruise.
Yes.
I think his name's Chuck in the movie. But yeah, he's wearing that suit. And then there's, like, a go-go girl kind of person. And then there's Tina, who, like, is a Barbie-type character.
Right.
But then you got, like, Scuzz with a mohawk, and you've got that big dude with the chain. His name is Suicide.
Yeah, Suicide, I know. Right.
And then you got everyone's favorite, Linnea Quigley playing Trash. Scream Queen extraordinaire, Linnea Quigley.
Yeah, Linnea Quigley has had quite a career in the Scream Queen genre. And,
yeah.
Yeah, I mean, she's a real presence here.
Oh, she definitely is in a scene or two.
Yes.
We'll get to it. And so you meet them. They're going to go meet Freddy and hang out, I guess.
Yes. And Miguel Nunez is Spider.
He's
the tall guy. I remember him from... He played Juana Man.
I saw that.
Oh, you didn't
no.
see it? Okay. You're not missing much. But if you want to see Miguel Nunez's starring vehicle, yeah, Juana Man.
Okay. I knew I'd seen him around, but never saw Juana Man.
Right.
He's great in this, though, too. Later, he, like, calls... He calls Frank or someone a honky.
He says, dumbass honky.
I think he calls Bert a honky.
Yes, it is.
Great. And Bert is played by Clue Gulliger. He's, like, in charge of the warehouse, right?
Yes, yes.
So they end up calling him. Frank and Freddy wake up from the gas that hit him in the face, and they call Bert, like, hey, something's going on here, because they see the dogs are barking now, the half dogs.
Oh, and, man. Like, and that's a scene I don't like.
Okay.
And mainly it's because of, like, when we were talking on the John Wick episode about, like, how animal abuse is just a plot point in movies. And like, I know it's just a stupid toy puppet dog. I get that, you know, and it looks really fake too. But I mean, you know, when the thing comes to life,
it's a zombie.
It's a zombie. I get it. I totally get it. I understand that. Okay. But I just don't, the idea, when I see James Caron, the visual of him picking up that crutch and just start beating the dog to death. And you hear like the, on the soundtrack, it's like, no, no, fuck that. That's terrible. Don't do it.
I thought it was hilarious.
I hated it.
I thought it was funny because it's so stupid.
No, it is. Of course, dude.
It's not John Wick.
No.
Where they kill that little puppy.
I agree.
It's a split dog that's barking and panting like it's in a Three Stooges sketch.
You're right, dude. It looks entirely fake and it's really dumb. But it's kind of in the same like ballpark for me.
Yeah, I got you though. Like,
yeah.
Maybe the sound effect puts it over the edge.
Exactly.
No, just a whimpering dog.
Get rid of the whimper and maybe I can take it. I can look
away. What
if
it got aggressive and was like, "Arr!" and then they kill it?
Well, I guess in that moment, yeah, you'd have to do something about it. Yeah, if the dog is threatening your life, then of course do something. But, you know.
But if it's not just laying there, you know, split open.
Yes, it's just wagging nothing. Its tail, like not hurting anybody.
Yeah, and like there's butterflies pinned to a board that are flapping their wings again too here.
Those butterfly puppets
it's like,
are pretty
great. Oh no,
great.
Everything's reanimating. Yes,
exactly.
And then the body in the freezer, the meat locker, is knocking on the door to get out. And they're like, oh my God, should we let him out? Well, let's call Bert. So they call Bert and say, hey, we got a situation here.
Yeah, enter Clue Gulager. Clue Gulager is, he's been around a long time. He started acting in the 1950s, and he didn't stop until he was in 2022.
Mm-hmm.
When he walks in, he's got a really sexy silver chain and a members-only jacket. I think this is just Clue Gulager's clothes.
It probably is.
He just showed up to the set.
This was a low-budget film.
Yeah.
I know they had to have had budget for costume.
Right.
Because everyone's like totally costumed up in this film.
For the gang of teens, yeah, I think that was where a lot of the budget went, yeah.
Well, so do you think, like, Ernie, that's his own, like, apron he's wearing for like, the body?
Right. Okay,
I
doubt it. That was expensive, too.
I'm going extreme here, but yeah. No, this looks like what I think Clue Gulager looks like.
Absolutely. I mean, yeah. He just walked around this
way. What he does.
Exactly.
You know?
You could see him at the liquor store buying a pack of smokes wearing this exact outfit.
Yes, he's definitely buying cigarettes in that jacket. But yeah, he shows up and he kind of like takes charge of the situation. Well, you know, in the movie they shot him in the head and it killed him or whatever. And they're like, okay, so the plan is to open the door, let what is referred to in the community as the yellow man. It's this dead body with yellow flesh. It's like not decomposed or anything, freshly dead, but his skin has turned yellow.
And he's hairless.
Yeah. So he runs out. And Fred is supposed to whack him on the head, but it doesn't happen because he's scared, I think.
Yes.
And he runs and starts choking Bert. And then they end up getting him down on the ground. They cut his head off.
The pickaxe through the back of the head.
Yeah.
Is just so, like, I mean, it. Look. It's not the grossest movie I've ever seen, but like this particular thing where you just see like it going, I'm picturing that happening to myself and then me living through it. Like, because he still keeps screaming.
Yeah, because the Bert pickaxes the back of his head while he's laying flat on the ground face down. So Fred and Frank, these names, it's giving me, there's too much Fred, Frank,
yeah, there's too
F,
much F,
Ert,
I know,
F, Ert, Frank,
I know,
Frank,
exactly,
just,
yeah.
Anyway, but they got him pinned down and Bert just pickaxe the back of his head and it goes through his head and into the ground, so he's like stuck there.
Yeah
Which, oh yeah, it's pretty rough, man.
It's a really violent image, you know. And then they see that the guy is not dead, so they're like, okay, what do we do now? Well, let's hack off his head.
Yeah,
so then Bert gets down there, Clue Gulager, with
the hacksaw.
I mean, geez, with a freaking saw, and just start, and it's not a clean cut. He has to like actually, like, you know, saw into it like a 2x4. And the guy starts screaming again, and he's still not dead, even when the full, like, the head is now separated.
Yeah, and it's awesome, because we kind of got this, like, medium shot of all of them together, like, and the guy on the ground, and it's, like, all, it's unbroken, almost, like, there's cuts and stuff, but, like, you see them all three kind of just like bumbling, like, what do we do? What do we do?
It, right.
It's humorous, but it's disturbing what they're doing.
Oh, absolutely. That's I think what really gets to you is that like this kind of goes beyond just like black humor, because it's like they're committing a real atrocity here.
Yeah.
And throughout the whole scene too, all three of them are screaming. Particularly Fred and Frank. They're just like like I mean they're it is and it's
they're
turned
screaming
up.
Like children.
I know. And it never stops.
And Bert's their dad. He's got to be like, hey, kids, stop.
Yeah, because at some point, like, he has to, like, be sort of a calming influence, but it's Clue Gulager, so you're only getting so calm.
Does he smoke in this movie? I don't think he does.
He didn't.
That's a missed opportunity.
Exactly.
Right there.
I thought for sure he'd be all over that,
So they cut the guy's head off, and now the body is loose from the head, so it's free. It gets up and starts running around headless. Causing all this trouble and shit.
Knocking over, like, racking and stuff.
This is a fucking, like, comedy sketch, you know, in the middle of this movie.
Yeah.
Which is a comedy horror, so.
Yeah.
It makes sense.
Can you
imagine the absurdity? Like, if you get put in a situation where there's a dead body walking around trying to kill you, what are you going to do? These guys are scrambling.
I mean,
it's humorous.
You've already cut its head off and that didn't do anything. you impaled its head while it was still attached, and that didn't do anything. I mean, I guess I'd probably be screaming like Frank, but I think at some point I would just tackle it and start doing the. It's funny because the plan they come up with is to just like start cutting it into pieces, and like stomping the pieces like into the ground, like making it into jelly.
Yep.
Like that's the only way we can kill this thing.
Yeah, they tie it up and then they end up dismembering it like Dexter,
right?
And they're still moving.
Yeah.
Every part of his body is still moving.
They've got these trash bags full of the parts. And all the trash bags are like kind of wiggling around a little bit.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's a scary idea.
It is. Like, I keep saying how humorous this is.
Yeah.
But it's actually a little frightening, too.
Of course.
It's a very good balance that Dan O'Bannon does in this film as the director. Like, He walks the line of the horror and comedy very well, because it is funny, but it's also scary.
And it's weird, too, with Dan O'Bannon, because I don't think he was known for, like, comedy before this. I mean, he was known for the exact opposite.
Yeah. Yeah, you know? Definitely.
I mean, Alien is one of the scariest movies ever made. You know? And to know that he had this sense of humor is actually very encouraging, you know, because like you, it's this other side of him.
Right. So the plan is to take the body over to the morgue in the cemetery that's next door, where Ernie works. It's friends with Bert here.
Yeah.
They're lifelong friends. I guess they've worked next to each other for 30 years or something. So
there's two jokes at play here. Of course, Bert and Ernie.
Yeah.
Which is that's,
I did not catch that.
Okay. And
wow.
Now I caught it right. I was like, okay, that's funny. But there's something I need to talk about.
Okay.
Don Calfa plays Ernie.
Uh-huh.
Don Calfa, you know him from Weekend at Bernie's. Or maybe you don't. Maybe only I know him from Weekend at Bernie's. Whatever. But he is playing Ernie Kaltenbrunner. This is not a good joke to make.
Okay.
It's the one aspect of the film that aged the worst for me. This is my first time seeing it, so it was my first exposure to it. But the implication here is that one of the architects of the Holocaust is hiding out in America and living as a mortician, where he burns bodies in a crematorium. That's too much.
I did not think of that, catch that at all.
Yes. I mean, I guess Ernie is his alias, but Ernst Kaltenbrunner is like one of the heads of the Gestapo.
Do they mention his last name in the film, though, or is that just the credits?
It's just in the credits.
Okay, so that's a hidden joke they made.
But like he's got, like, the pearl-handled German Luger.
He does.
You know?
Yeah.
So, and it's always on him. And he's always, like, ready with it, like, every time someone comes to the door.
Yeah.
So he's a war criminal who's hiding out.
So let's think. This is 1985, right?
Yeah.
And they've been friends for 25 years, so that would be 1960. So it's a little after the end of the war, but I mean, he's still, the timeline works out.
Well, yeah, if he had just ensconced himself in American culture and like, you know, lost his accent, he obviously still like he's on edge the whole time. I mean, he's always ready to kill somebody because he's always, you know, thinking about being exposed. Look, it's just one of these things I caught and I was like, oh, wait a minute, that's not funny. You know, they shouldn't have done this, but you know, we can move on from now.
Right. And so like all the punk rockers are partying in the cemetery. They're waiting for Freddie to get off work and This is the famous scene. Linnea Quigley gets naked and dances around and stuff. And that's what everyone remembers about this part of the movie.
She's sitting there with Miguel Nunez, with Spider, mm-hmm. and they're talking about just whatever.
Yeah.
And then she starts talking about, like, you know, what's your biggest fear? And, you know, she talks about, like, this thing of being torn apart by a bunch of old men who sort of envelop her.
Yeah, yeah.
And
do you ever fantasize about being killed?
Yeah.
Like, she says stuff like that. She's so edgy, you know?
Oh, of course. Exactly. Yeah. And she's
turned on talking about this stuff.
Right. And she is apparently, like the whatever clothes she was wearing, she's accessibly naked. Like,
yeah.
One tear, it's like Chippendale's clothing. It just all comes
right,
off.
It's gone.
Right. Yeah. And then she walks over to this big gravestone, gets on top of it, and they have, like, a tape deck that they're carrying around with them, and they just put on the music, and this is just something, I guess, that trash does.
Well, someone says, like, I think it's the Tom Cruise-looking guy, Chuck or something.
Chuck.
He's like, I'd like to keep talking to you, but Trash is naked again, and I'm not going to miss this.
Yes, yes.
He, like, walks up, and everyone's, like, partying up.
Uh-huh, yeah. This is just part of...
This is her thing, I guess.
I guess her thing, yeah. And, but, and you know, it's a very highly memorable scene.
It is. It's definitely gratuitous.
Of course it is, because, I mean, like, there is no reason for it.
No.
But it was the 80s, and you just, like, it was... It wasn't obligatory, but it was just part of what you were, like, signing on for
it
when
was.
You saw a movie.
And before she does that, when she's talking about getting killed and stuff, like, she actually mentions, like, she wants to get surrounded by men and ripped apart.
Yeah.
And that's how she wants to die, which is foreshadowing.
Yes. And it's like, when she's making that speech, I mean, like, you know, in that moment, that is, of course, going to be her fate in this film.
Yeah.
You know, even before it happens, you're like, right. Okay, well, that's how she dies.
Exactly.
Yeah, I got it.
And I love another line she has a little earlier when they first pull up to the warehouse to pick up Freddy. They're like, what a piece of shit building this is. And she goes, I like it. It makes a statement. Yes, right. She's just this edgelord in 1985. It's like...
Well, I mean, like, this doesn't look like a gang of punks in 1985. It looks like kind of like Road Warrior stuff.
Yeah, they do. You know, and they're driving around in that car.
Yeah, they got a Dragula. I don't know what the hell this is about. I mean, what's the big guy? Suicide. This guy, I mean, his whole personality is that, like, he's never happy.
Yeah.
He's never satisfied with anything. Even when Trash is, like, groping him and saying, and is naked and saying, let's have sex.
Yeah.
Can't do it.
Yeah.
You know?
It's like, have some respect for the dead, is what he says to her. As they're partying in a graveyard.
I mean, and why are there 8 people waiting for the 9th person? Because, like, they're there to pick up Freddy, who doesn't get off for another 2.5 hours.
I guess they're hanging out. There's nothing else to do.
I guess, and he's the glue, I guess, for this gang.
Well, Freddy is Tina's boyfriend, and I know they're waiting to pick him up.
Yes.
I guess Tina might be one of the leaders of this gang,
yeah,
actually.
She must have a lot of say.
She is this preppy girl.
I know. Yeah.
She does not fit in with the rest of this crew. She doesn't even curse or anything. She says, like, oh, darn, like,
I know.
And fudge,
yes.
And stuff like that. And everyone else is just cuss words, screaming, like, they don't care. They're punk rock maniacs.
Uh-huh.
She's this, like, uptight preppy girl, but she's almost, like, the leader of the gang.
It's weird. They do defer to her. I mean, and they're hanging out in this graveyard waiting for her boyfriend.
Yeah.
Tina's got a lot of pull.
I think it's funny, because it's not even commented on in the film at all. It's not even a thing. It's just visually, you're like, this doesn't make sense.
And we're just analyzing it after the fact and realizing that, Tina was one of the leaders.
Maybe she's, like, actually, like, a secret, like, violent, hardcore person.
It's possible.
And, yeah.
Yeah. Maybe she has committed some horrific act of violence in front of them.
Yeah.
And now they're all on edge.
She's, like, the villain who, like, looks real put together and nice, you know?
Right.
But once you actually find out what's going on behind the scenes, and
right.
It's a facade. But anyway, they take these body parts over to Ernie at the crematorium, and they want a favor. They want him to burn them, and they tell him it's weasels, it's rabid weasels. Like, so don't touch them.
When Clu Gulager is telling Ernie about this, he's like, oh yeah, well, it's just rabid weasels, and can we put them in your crematorium? And, like,
Ernie, we burn the weasels?
And Ernie's like, well, but that's really cruel.
Yeah, they're alive.
They're alive. You want to burn these animals alive? What the hell's wrong with you? And he's like, and there's something about, there's something about Clu Gulager's performance in this movie where I feel like he knew his lines, but he was saying them really fast. It's almost like what I do on the podcast sometimes, where I'm so excited and I want to make a point. Like, he's doing all of his line readings like that.
Yeah.
And when you watch it again, just look out for it, because you'll get the gist of what he's saying, but you don't hear all the words, because he's just like spitting out this dialogue so quickly.
I like it.
I like it too.
Well, he's all excited. Like, he doesn't know what's going on. He's worried. He's scared. You know?
It adds to his desperation. Yeah.
Yeah.
And his motivation too throughout all this is like, not till the end is it more like it's about life and death. For him at this moment, he's trying to preserve his business.
Yeah, let's hide this.
Yes.
Because it's going to hurt business. And Ernie's like, what? You're like a medical supply store. Like, you got a shipment of rabid weasels in it. Well, what's the big deal? No one's going to care.
Right.
He's like, I don't want the word to get out that we got rabies here. And like, I don't know.
I know.
I guess there's like a 1%. Truth that maybe something will happen.
Right.
Be like, oh, wait, don't buy your supplies there. It might be contaminated with rabies.
And he keeps lying.
Yeah.
And telling different stories until finally he's like, okay, listen, Ernie, can you keep a secret? You know? And he's like, I mean, really, can you keep a big, big secret? And eventually Ernie agrees to
Ernie's like, you're going to owe me.
Right. Yes. you're going to have his favor. And he gives it away. And meanwhile, Frank and Freddie are like getting more and more sick because they were exposed to that green gas that came out of the
barrel.
It
sprayed them right in the face. It knocked them out cold.
Yes. And like they're looking more and more zombified as the movie goes on.
Yeah. And the skin is losing color. Their eyes are
jaundiced
and turning reddish around the rims. And yeah.
And they're in a lot of pain and they're, you know, like, you know, they're
lethargic. Yeah. I really like Freddie. The performance is really good, actually, because when they try to move him, like, and he screams in pain, and like it's actually like realistic. It's like, wow, this guy, it hurts.
And there's a really ultra realistic moment later on where they lift up his shirt.
Oh,
and you see the bruising.
Yeah.
And we had just seen, like, when we first went to Ernie's funeral home.
Yeah.
We saw the bruising from the rigor mortis on the corpse that he was like embalming.
Yeah.
And he like, he diagnoses it right there. Oh yeah, that's blood starting to pool, and you know, I was just like, oh god,
yep.
this is some like real body horror in the middle of this like horror comedy.
Yep.
You know?
Yep. So ultimately, they show Ernie what's in the bag, and it's moving body parts, and he's like, oh my god, and the hand grabs his leg.
Yeah,
and it, like, rips his jeans.
It rips part of this red velour tracksuit that he's wearing. Again, this must be Don Calfa's clothes.
Right, I just rolled out of bed.
I mean, why would you have that as a movie prop? Someone owns that piece of that outfit, and it's Don Calfa.
This guy's got to be comfortable, you know, in his job.
So. Yes, that's right.
But he agrees, like, okay, we'll burn it, but you owe me big time now. Yeah. You really owe me.
I mean, yes. Yes, of course. I mean, like, obviously you owe me. I'm burning a body for you. And not only that, I'm burning a secret body, like a body that shouldn't exist and is like some kind of government thing.
And one that's alive still.
I know.
In pieces, moving. Okay, yeah.
Yeah.
I'll keep a secret. You owe me.
I know. I'm committing a murder. You know?
So they burn it and then they think everything's great. Now we're done with this, you know, and you get another music cue, the song from the credits. Smoke pours out of the building and it follows the smoke up and out the building just like it did previously with the credits.
That's right.
You get the like the great 80s music.
Uh-huh.
As the smoke comes out and fills the sky and the graveyard and it starts raining.
Right.
Raining this smoke down onto everything. Well, and it does start burning everyone's flesh. This gang that's in the graveyard gets poured down on, and they run for shelter in Suicide's car. And they're saying it burns their flesh.
And it eats through the car, through the car's roof, because they put the top up on the convertible, and it's going through the top and getting on them still. Like, it's raining inside the car.
Yeah. And Linnea Quigley is, like, she's naked,
she's
right?
She's still nude.
So she's got it all over her. I mean, they all do, right? I mean, everyone would probably be burning, but because she has no clothes to protect her, I guess it's affecting her the most.
Yeah.
I love her performance here. She's like, oh my God, it burns. Like, she's freaking out about it. Like, I need a towel. Like, I need some. She's actually really good here. It's like, man, she's actually acting. She's not just naked.
It's if you take off your clothes on camera, that is really courageous,
mm-hmm.
you know, and she is doing it for extended periods in this movie. Yeah. It's half a brave of her
screen time.
Yep.
And she does a good job acting.
Right.
Which is very good. You get the best of both worlds, I guess, is
no doubt.
What they're getting. So they're hiding in the car, and now we see the rain dripping down through the graves onto the dead corpses, and thus begins the zombie apocalypse.
Right. And, like, there's some great zombie visuals here that's unlike other movies you've seen, where it's like sometimes corpses that are completely decomposed, mm-hmm. and the zombie is just like half a skeleton.
Yep.
And it's doing what it can to move around, whether that means yep. walking on its hands or rolling around with a torso heap,
uh-huh.
or like I think the one that they capture later on is yeah. just like, you see it's like hopping around on a sternum.
Yep.
Like they really have some original zombie visuals here.
It's awesome.
Yeah.
The makeup work in this is amazing.
Right.
On all the zombies. I mean, the yellow man is just a guy with like yellow color on him.
Yes,
that's
exactly.
It. It's not even really a zombie makeup per se.
Yeah.
But like everyone else, the tar man we meet in the basement.
That's
something else.
I've never seen anything like that before.
Yeah. And like you said, that half corpse they kind of capture, like
right.
that's awesome, like puppet work.
I think that Gore Verbinski must have seen this film and was inspired for like a Curse of the Black Pearl, because
yeah.
like all the pirates on that movie, when the moonlight hits
yeah.
them, it looks kind of like the Tar Man.
Yeah.
With like the exposed rib cage. And
yeah, like coming through the body.
Yes.
Yeah, yeah. Probably.
I know. Mean,
Tar Man is iconic now.
I know.
A horror icon.
And he's just screaming brains, how he always eats some brains, yeah. you know,
and it's silly when he does that.
Oh, of course.
Silly, but it's awesome.
The brain eating in this movie,
yeah.
It's always funny and it's always scary too,
mm-hmm.
you know, but like, I love that the zombies they're not intelligent exactly, but they can talk.
Yeah, I call them smart.
Yeah, smart zombie.
I guess smart yeah. zombie.
Right.
Not like they're Albert Einstein, you know, like
no.
smoking a pipe or something. No.
They're not.
They're just not like lumbering around going, ooh,
right.
like a traditional zombie. This is an early instance of fast zombies, you
that's
know.
True. Oh, that's the other part of it, they, right, yeah.
If they have the appendages to move, they'll move, you
yep.
know, they'll walk and run and chase.
Right.
And talk. They talk. This might be the first time zombies talked in a movie, actually.
Well, so Day of the Dead was the same year.
Okay.
And right. I don't know which one came first.
All right.
But
so.
But yeah, and in that one, it doesn't have the same, they don't talk to the extent that they do in this
right.
movie.
Right.
Because in this movie, there's a centerpiece later on with that
the
like,
corpse
torso
lady. Yeah.
Where it's an extended dialogue scene between a zombie and its captors.
Right.
You know, which
yeah.
is like, I've never seen that in any other zombie fiction.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. But yeah, they're smart and they look good.
Yeah.
So,
it's great. It
sounds like a good date.
I know. right.
So this is when they get attacked, right?
I mean, now they have to like use the funeral home as a fortress.
Yeah, because the car is not safe anymore, right? Because it's raining on them. They're like, we need to get into the funeral home.
Yeah.
Tina, meanwhile, goes into the warehouse to look for Freddy. They split up, I guess. And then everyone else runs through the graveyard. I don't know.
Two of the gang also split off, and they go to the warehouse,
oh,
too.
Oh, yeah.
And just like the general and his wife, they are seen and then forgotten about for like
That's
a long
right,
time.
Yeah, it's like Chuck and Casey, I think,
yes,
are their names.
Yes,
and
the you know, the new wave guy and the girl who looks like Annie Potts.
Yeah, right.
Yep. And man, I Tina does a lot of the Scream Queen heavy lifting here.
Yes, she does.
Because she's just shrieking throughout the entire film. That's mostly what her character is. And there's the great gag where like it had been established that the third step on the warehouse staircase
yeah.
is, you know, defective.
Right, because Tina did go over there by herself at one point, right?
Yes.
And met the Tar Man in the basement. And
that's
attacked
what this
her.
Is. Yeah, yeah. That's what this whole sequence
right.
is. Because when she's trying to escape the Tar Man, she like runs up the stairs and she like you know, steps really hard, puts a lot of weight on that third step, and down she goes.
Yeah, yeah. And she avoids the Tar Man. This, like, she didn't escape, but it does give her time, because right. Tarman is right behind her, and she kind of falls through the hole.
Yes.
And now he's on the stairs. He's got to turn around, go back down in his like weird, like lumbering, swaying walk that he has. Cause yep. he's this guy, this corpse is barely held together. So he, yes. I love the performance. Whoever's in this, they got some special guy who was trained in like doing that kind of work.
Alan Troutman, I think his name is. And he's both the actor and the puppeteer.
Okay.
So like he's just doing everything.
Yeah. So he's chasing her, and she goes into this like closet and locks herself in.
Right.
And the Tar Man, like another instance of like smart zombies, he like uses a chain and a winch and like wraps it around the door and like is like rotating this winch, like this pulley system, and it pulls the doors right off.
I never thought that I'd see like zombie engineer, you know, and he does it. You know?
This guy's got a resume.
Yes,
you know?
Absolutely.
Maybe he was an engineer before he became a Tar Man.
That's right. That's man, Tar Man, 1985 to present. And then before that, engineer.
Hobbies, brains.
Nice, dude. Oh, man.
So,
but the rest of the gang comes in and like rescues her while the Tar Man is doing this, you know, ingenious pulley thing.
Yeah, suicide opens the like curtain and Tar Man is right there and he looks at him. It's like, brains.
Yes, exactly. And then Tar Man.
And he chomps him.
Gets suicide real good, you know.
He takes a huge bite out of this guy's forehead.
Ooh.
It's
so good.
It's a very nice effect. It looks gruesome, man.
I know. And there's a gigantic pool of blood around it, like in the aftermath, and everybody's screaming because but to this point, we'd seen that real like horrific act of violence against the yellow guy, but there was no blood because he was a frozen. Because he was all frozen. This is like now. Okay, there's blood splatter everywhere.
Yeah.
And the gang is reeling from it, and so they have to like figure out another way to escape. And, you know, at some point, I don't know how Linnea Quigley ends up getting, like, you know, fallen upon by the horde of guys. But she finds herself in the graveyard again.
Yeah, they're all running out of the warehouse now to go to the morgue.
Yes.
Because they know there's someone there. They thought they saw Freddy walking over there.
Yeah.
So they're like, all right, we can run back to that building and get help, you know.
Right.
So they all do that. And as they go through the graveyard, the zombies are coming out and attacking.
Yes.
And I love the musical cue that happens here. They're all kind of hiding under this mausoleum or some crap. And like a skeleton comes out of the ground. It's obviously like a fake skeleton on a pole that just gets pushed up out of the dirt, you know? But it keeps cutting like closer to its head. And it like looks up in the sky with like eyeballs that look unaffected by death. And the jaw just like drops open. It's very fake looking, right? But this music cue happens. You get 45 Graves. Do you want a party? Like it kicks on this like awesome rock song.
Do you want a party?
Dude, it's party time. And like this song just kicks in the energy and it changes the tone of the movie so much. Because it's like, all right, we're kind of in spooky zone right now, but like, no, it's party time now. These zombies are coming and we're eating everybody.
Which is just like, I mean, like, at that time, I know horror was a big deal. Like, and it was very cool to go to, you know, the movies with your friends and watch horror movies and get scared and have a good time. But like, I don't think that I know of, I can't name another movie from this era that celebrated horror like this.
Yeah.
You know, that was just like kind of telling the audience it's okay to have a great time with this. And
it's a love letter, man.
Yes, it is, man.
It's right in the heart of this 80s renaissance of horror.
Right.
And it's just saying, you know, we all love horror. Let's party.
Yes.
This is awesome.
Let's turn this movie experience into like a con.
I mean, it's a huge cult movie.
Yeah.
I mean, I would say it's even beyond cult now. Like, it's just people love this movie.
Did you see the Rotten Tomatoes rating?
No, I didn't.
91%.
Yeah.
This was a critical darling. You know,
was that was critical.
Yes.
That was an audience.
And exactly. So even like, people who you would think wouldn't like it are actually like, hey, this rules.
Yeah.
You know, this is a really good time. I had a lot of fun watching this, you know.
And it's showing at midnight theaters constantly still.
Right.
Like, it's like, imagine people just hanging out watching this movie at midnight in the dark. Like, it's a riot, I'm sure, in that crowd. It's like probably Rocky Horror level stuff.
Yeah, of course. And if everybody has seen the movie 1,000 times, then yeah, you just okay. Let's misbehave.
Let's party.
Yes,
it's party time. And this is when they all kind of split up, and Trash gets eaten by the men that surround her, and she's actually like scared.
Right.
In this scene, she's not like, oh yes, I'm so happy and horny now that this is happening. She's scared.
Yeah, exactly.
So the ambulance comes right to help Frank and Freddy because. They, like we've said, they're dying basically here.
Yeah.
They look like they're dying. But actually, the ambulance gets there. The paramedics go in and they're like, no, these guys are dead.
It's one of the scarier scenes in the movie. Not because there's a lot of like scares in it, but what the listen to these paramedics like.
The
like,
implications.
I know. It's just it's a really an eerie feeling it gives you. Like, you know, the idea that like your vital signs tell these medical professionals that you're not alive.
Yeah.
Well, ugh. You know,
like the way these guys are just going downhill throughout these scenes here is really like effective and scary. Cause even before this, Frank gets like scared. He's like, I gotta call my wife. I gotta do this.
Yeah.
Like, he's scared, man.
Yeah.
Yeah. And they're dying because of this gas, which is cool. They don't really touch much on that cause no one else is dying from gas exposure, but they just got like shot in the face with it. So maybe that's a different reaction that they're having.
Well, and Clu Gulager is still at this point just concerned about like, you know, bad publicity for his for his business.
Right.
And he's concerned about his two employees, but that's secondary to let's get everything back where it needs to go. And at one point, like he's talking to the paramedics and the two guys are the two paramedics are like, you know, well, what's the deal? You know, like what were they exposed to? How do we know? And, you know, and Clu Gulager goes, well, I don't know. I don't know exactly. And they're like, well, can you find out? And he goes, well, you know, I could make a couple of calls, but not till tomorrow morning. They're like, sir, this is an emergency, life and death right now.
Your friends might die.
Yes.
Yeah. And the paramedics, the way they say it to him is like, are you fucking serious?
Yeah.
That's their tone. Like, are you kidding me?
Right.
These people might die because you don't want to give us information. They can tell, like, he knows.
I know. Yeah, it's pretty obvious to everyone, yeah.
Oh, man. So the paramedics go out and get eaten, right?
Yes.
And then one of the zombies calls for more paramedics. He picks up that, like, CB radio and he's like, send more paramedics or something like that. Yeah. Send more cops.
Yes. Because they do the gag twice. Send more paramedics. And then when two cops get it, they get on the radio, send more cops. You know, it's fantastic.
And they're ambushing them, right?
Yeah.
Like the one zombie who makes the call is standing there with like a police jacket and hat on that he like took off the other cop. And he's holding like the flashlight to wave him down.
That comes later. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. With the, oh man.
And then like five or six cop cars pull in and he's waving them. And then they all park and get out. And then out of the woods, just a swarm of zombies ambush.
That's
so great.
So great. Yeah. It just,
it's like they know what they're doing. They're like, we're setting a trap for these guys.
I love how smart the zombies are in this movie. Like they setting traps and like just intelligent hunting and gathering.
Yeah.
Fantastic stuff. You know?
So they ultimately have to hide, Fred and Frank, you know, in the chapel or something because they're going to turn.
Yes.
And at this point, a lot of people have shown up in the mortuary here. You've got like Spider is there now and Scuzz and there's so many people with weird names. I'm struggling with names on this episode, Dave.
And
Tina's there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Let's see. Spider and Scuzz are still there.
Yeah.
And And Tina decides that she wants to be left behind. She wants to be left in the chapel.
Yeah, she wants to help Freddy.
Yeah, to like comfort shepherd him along to his dying, you know, moment. And which is not the smartest thing she's ever done. Because they have to barricade them in there because they know these guys are going to turn.
Yeah.
And a zombie attack happens in the mortuary. And this is where Scuzz meets his end.
Oh, yeah. Like the front door, they're breaking through and like they're trying to board it up and keep them out. And while they're there, like, a zombie comes through the opening, like, bites Scuzz right on the forehead.
Right.
Kind of like how Suicide got it.
Right.
And as he gets bitten, like, he's holding the corpse, and they're, like, pulling him back. And they pull the corpse in half.
Ugh.
And it, like, comes into the building with them. And they're able to, like, fend off the rest of them. But you've got this, like, torso of this, like, decomposed lady there. Ugh.
It's like we find out that these zombies, and we already knew it from the yellow guy earlier, but like they're almost totally indestructible. I mean, like you can just like you can maim them all you want. You can bisect them and they're still coming after you.
Yeah.
They just, you know, not only will they keep moving, they still want to feed.
Right. You could cut a finger off and it'll still worm its way around trying to get you.
The finger is now another zombie.
Yeah.
And like they figure out a way to like subdue her for the moment after she gets scuzz, and they put her on this this table.
Yep. It's like the embalming table.
And they strap her down and they start like interviewing this lady essentially. And it's such an unexpectedly serious and thoughtful turn.
Yes.
When the lady tells us that the zombies eat brains to kill the pain of being dead.
Yeah.
It hurts to be dead.
Yeah. I can feel myself rotting, is what she says.
And does it mean that, like, they feel this pain when they're zombies? Or did they feel that pain when they were, like, you know, just bones in the ground?
Yeah. I don't know. They don't establish what she means by that, right?
I hope she means that it's zombies.
I hope so, too.
Because if we already fear death as much as we do... Now we have to contend with pain for all eternity, and we can't move or do anything about it.
Yeah, I like to think that it's just when you become a zombie, it hurts.
I hope that's the case, yes.
Because, all right, I was dead, now I'm not, but my body is still, you know, decomposed.
Uh-huh.
So, yeah, that hurts. You know, when you're alive, you get an injury, it hurts, right?
Yes.
Imagine just, like, your whole body is dead. But you're able to feel it. Yeah, that sucks, man. That's going to hurt.
Oh, man.
All right. We went somewhere I didn't expect to go on this one. I get to.
Well, and so did the movie.
Yeah.
You know?
The movie. Right, exactly. But I like to think it's when you're a zombie, it hurts. You know, they're back. They didn't ask for this. Like,
you're probably right.
Like, this doesn't happen. It's not supposed to happen.
Right.
So they're feeling the pain.
You're right.
When they eat
this is unnatural.
This doesn't make sense either, though. Like, when I eat a brain, it's like, you know, I'm numbing it with alcohol, you know?
Yeah.
It's obviously some kind of metaphor for drug addiction and things like that.
Sure.
But, yeah, the brain makes the pain go away.
Well, I mean, I guess it's also maybe a metaphor for whether it's like, you know, killing your pain with alcohol or drugs. I mean, some people do it with food.
Yeah, anything.
You know, it's all...
Any addictive behavior.
Exactly,
you know?
Yeah.
So, yeah. And the puppet work on this corpse is amazing, too.
Yes.
It's like almost a skeleton, but there's lots of flesh on it still. But, like, you can see, like, the breasts of the lady.
Yeah.
And they're, like, decomposed. And you see the lower rib cage and, like, the spine there, like...
Right.
Where it connects to your pelvis.
Right.
Like, it's just kind of, like, wiggling.
It's twirling a little bit, too.
Yeah. Ooh,
yeah.
It's like a little tail.
I know.
Oh, dude. It's something else.
Yeah.
Now, like, the mouth work on the puppets are not very good. It's just kind of they open and close they talk.
Right.
And that doesn't look that good, but I buy it. And it's because they've established this movie is a little silly in ways, like, I accept it.
Totally.
Yeah.
It doesn't take you out of the movie.
No, it doesn't. And it's probably one more thing to laugh at the midnight screening.
Oh, absolutely. Because it's already like the intentional humor has you in stitches. And now you're like, if you're looking at like kind of shoddy effects, you're like, well, this is just part of the party. You know?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, and that's awesome because that's such an unexpected turn, Dave. I'm glad you brought it up.
Yeah.
I was going to do it and you did.
Cool.
I appreciate it. But Scuzz is gone now.
Yes.
Poor Scuzz.
Yeah, and we're left now to, like, down to Miguel Nunez.
Yeah, we got Joanna Man. Yeah. We've got...
That's right.
Clue Gulager.
Yep. And Ernie Kaltenbrunner.
Yeah, we've got a Nazi on the
run.
Oh,
my God. Yeah. Man.
Wow.
Yes.
We did mention Trash does come back, right? Briefly. When the zombies are, like... having fun out there and setting traps, she comes out of the grave, I guess, as this, like, vixen zombie. And she's completely naked again, of course. And she starts eating everybody.
And I guess, like, I know it's gratuitous, as we pointed out, but, like, zombies, whether in this movie or any other story we've been told, they're always wearing the same, like, tattered clothes that they were buried in.
Yeah, your grandfather's suit.
Yes. So, like, I guess it makes sense since she died nude that that's just her, like, you know, death.
Yeah, it makes sense.
Yeah.
There's no story related thing or anything. It's just like, hey, this is Trash. You know, you guys probably love her. She's back for two scenes that last 10 seconds.
She's all gray now. And
yeah, like, her skin is like white, but her red hair is still vibrant.
Exactly.
Which is a great image.
Sure.
Yeah, so she eats a homeless guy. And
she takes a big chunk out of this dude.
Yeah, and then later when the cops are surrounding the place, like, and the apocalypse is happening, like, she bites a guy.
Yep.
Which is really cool because there's a guy in the ambulance door or whatever, the cop car door, and he's, like, screaming on the radio, like, hey, we need this, blah, blah. And, like, three other zombies attack and, like, Trash comes in from the side.
Yeah.
And it's like a deformed face version with like the mouth really open.
Yeah.
It's kind of disturbing looking.
I know. Yeah. It's like, it's probably the biggest, like, as for the principal actors of like the, it's the most extensive makeup job where it like totally transforms them into something else.
Yeah. Freddy gets some makeup later when he turns and tries to get Tina. Like,
that's true.
And they
throw
acid on his face. Cause you gotta have acid and you know,
oh, of course you do. Right.
Well, cause Ernie's like, hey, maybe if we pour acid on them, it'll kill them all.
Yeah,
you know?
So, right.
I don't know. And he's got just like one little like beaker of acid. It's like not much.
I think it's Clue Gulager goes, well, that's not enough.
Yeah.
It's just like, he says the most obvious things sometimes.
I love it.
It's great.
It's so funny.
Because he just looks like
they're fucked. And
I know,
he knows it.
I know. And he reminds me so much of like my grandpa on my mom's side in the mid 80s.
Really?
He was just this guy who like was for the most part patient, but he was very logical, you know, and he was always just kind of like looking at something dumb you did and was like, well, that's not going to work. You know?
That line. Well, that's not going to work. I can just see it.
Right.
That's awesome. So Tina gets away, right? Because they hear her screaming as Freddy turns and he comes for her. But everyone rescues her. They break out. They throw the acid on him.
Uh-huh.
And now they lock him up again, but they hide in the attic to try to stay away from him.
Yeah.
And it's Ernie and Tina are up there. And the rest of them, like Spider and Bert, are going to try to escape in the cop car to get help.
Yes.
That's the plan. And right before they went in the attic, they tried to escape. And Ernie says, you know that favor I asked? Stay alive.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Yes. That was a pretty good call.
Which is a good line.
Yeah.
And they do escape. They get to the cop car, and they're going to try to get Ernie and everyone out, but they can't.
Yeah.
So they have to flee to call the cops.
And Spider is mad at Bert for, like, you know, like turning around and, like, essentially abandoning Tina
them.
And Ernie.
Yeah. I think this is when he calls him a honky.
Because it's when he crashes the car.
Yeah.
He's like, you dumbass honky or something like that.
Yeah. They crash into the warehouse.
Yeah.
And they run in there because that's the only place they can go.
Right.
Because the zombies are closing in on them. So they're in there, and I think Chuck and Casey are there too. Or
yes, and this is it's the first example of like returning to characters that we completely disregarded, because like we just like there's this quiet moment that we cut to of Casey and Chuck sitting there talking.
Yeah,
and like we have not seen them in forever, and it's two more characters that just completely left our minds, and now they're in there, and it's like when they first go into the warehouse, like Chuck embraces Spider, like he's really happy to see him, you know. And now they're a gang of four.
Yeah.
And they're, you know, escaping the zombie horde that's gathering outside.
Right. Yep. And so as this hell is breaking loose outside, they're in the warehouse and they're trying. They want to call for help, but the only phone is in the basement where Tar Man is. So they open the door to let him out. And Bert gets a baseball bat and like whacks his head off.
Man, dude.
And it goes flying.
I love this moment because it's like it's such a great. I've wanted characters in zombie movies to do what Clue Gulager does here, like where he just like full on stands there like he's in the batter's box and just takes a real big home run swing and just you know, lops this guy.
Jose Canseco,
dude, yeah,
boom.
It's great. And that you know, they defeat the Tar Man, at least for the moment.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not sure what happens exactly after this, but like they go back to when they try to get on the phone to call the cops. You know, they realize that it's not going to happen.
Yeah.
And then in just the last ditch effort to save the situation, Clue Gulager sees the phone number on the side of the barrel.
Yeah.
And he decides to call it. And that triggers like NORAD, apparently.
Yeah.
You know, which leads them to, he's put in contact with the general.
Yeah. He's back.
He's back. And he's woken up with a middle of the night call. Like, Clue Gulager gives him the information, but yeah. the camera cuts to the general in bed with his wife. And it's like a long scene where this guy is just taking down the information.
Yep. He's writing it down. And we only hear his side of the call. We don't hear Clue Gulager at all, but we know what he's saying.
Yeah.
Of course. But the general's just like, yes, I see. Okay. And then what happened?
No, I know.
Yes, I see. Okay. And then, yes, I see what happened.
It's
okay.
It's like 2 minutes.
Yeah,
of
it's
this,
that.
You know,
it's kind of funny.
It is.
But it is long. And his wife is there next to him, like, what's going on?
She looks kind of frantic, like, you know, and...
Because she's done with this.
I know.
She's fucking done with this job.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, it's ruining my marriage.
Right. And even though, like, we know now that, like, his mission is probably over, she's done with him, too. It's like, you know, when they move...
eat your own lamb chops, you know?
I'm out of here, you know?
So then we get, like, he goes down into a smoking room or whatever and opens his radar and, like, does something.
He calls
some guy operating a missile silo.
Yes.
And then you get an image of like a micro machine, like getting ready to fire a missile.
Wow. Yeah. this pretty unconvincing miniature.
Yes.
Yeah. I remember they used this kind of stuff in like the 40s and 50s. We saw it in Casablanca.
Oh, it
remember
looks like Thunderbirds
landed?
Go.
Yes. Yes, it does. It does. And not the greatest effect in the film.
No, but... it's fine. It suits it, I guess.
Yeah, it'd be just like another thing, like we talked about, if you were watching it, it's in a party atmosphere.
Yeah.
You'd just have a good time looking at that tank.
It looks like a fake Godzilla movie set, you know?
Yes, it does.
Yeah.
Totally. But, and the guy in the tank is also really funny because, like... He does the same thing that the general did where he's like, he's on the, he's just doing that one man phone conversation. Yes, sir.
Yeah.
Of course, sir. No problem, sir. That's a gutsy decision, sir. You know, it just goes on and on like that.
There's one great line the general says when he like makes his first call after he has the information. He's like, the eggs have hatched, you know, like, that means, it's on the loose.
Yes.
They've got to do something about it. Because he's looking for the eggs for his basket or something. That's like what they say.
Exactly.
Like,
that's the code word.
Code.
Right.
It's the eggs have hatched.
And I love his... We mentioned that computer that's in the liquor cabinet, you know, in his office.
Yeah.
And when he opens it up, it's one of these communications devices from the 80s that you don't know exactly how it works or what all the gadgets do.
Yeah.
But there's what looks like a fax machine, and there's like a phone receiver, and then there's a monitor... Mm-hmm. And then there's like an MS-DOS printer, there's like readouts happening.
Yeah.
And then there's an oscilloscope somewhere there too.
Yeah.
And like what all these things do, no clue, you know?
Right.
But it's some kind of thing that's real top secret that only this dude has.
This is you only see this in fucking spy movies and like, it does nothing.
It just
looks kind of cool.
Sure.
There
exactly.
You know, it's so advanced, you know, as an audience, we don't know.
Yeah, because we're mere civilians.
Yeah, we are. I mean, this is top secret stuff right here, you know.
Yes. So, only top men have these.
Yes, top men. So he gives them the go to launch a missile.
Right.
And they blast this town. But before the blast happens, we see Freddy get into the attic. He's like taunting Tina.
Yeah.
And he finally gets in. Ernie's got his little pistol and he's holding Tina. He's like ready to just blow his own brains out or something. Like, I don't know what he's going to do.
I think he's going to blow her brains out first and then his own, you know?
Yeah. Cause he kind of like is pointing it at her.
Because I guess now that's part of the other part of the other running joke with his character is he's now kind of in the Führer bunker.
Oh my God.
You know, which is just like,
okay.
Look guys, I'm sorry that I noticed this, okay? But it just...
This is why you're on the show, Dave.
Of course.
We need these kind of insights.
Thank you, yes.
But yeah, you're totally right. It's there's some deep symbolism here that not many people get. And then as soon as he breaks open the door, it like freezes. He's in there and then like the bomb drops,
yes.
You know? And that's pretty much the end of the movie.
Right. And I mean, you know, obviously this is, you know, in addition to the other metaphors we talked about, like with, you know, like obviously addiction and things like this. I mean, this is a real statement about nuclear proliferation and, you know, the idea that we're all, you know, just seconds away from, you know, nuclear annihilation at any time.
Yep.
And, you know, it's great that's part of a fun horror movie is that, like, you know, okay, you're also going to take you're going to eat your vegetables too.
Yeah.
You know, just remember, everybody, this great party in the 80s that we're having, you know, it could end at any time.
Yep.
Because, you know, we don't live in a peaceful world.
Right. And depending on the situation, you could be expendable, you know?
Yep.
To save all of us, we're going to kill some of us.
That's the key.
That's what they're doing here.
Yep.
Because at the end here, you know, it shows the bomb and you hear a voiceover of the general talking to someone. No, don't worry. 20 square blocks, 4,000 dead, you know. Don't worry about it. It'll all get washed away by the rain, which is a great line because we know, no, it's not.
Yes.
Everyone's fucked now even further.
I mean,
because there's 4,000 new dead people and it's raining this shit on everyone.
He doesn't know at this point that the rain is what caused it. And he didn't do any due diligence. He just wanted to, like, you know, contain the situation.
Nothing to worry about, sir. And then it ends with the skeleton coming back out of the ground and it's party time again. The song kicks. It's the same exact shot of the skeleton coming out and then party time.
I don't think I've ever seen any other movie where the end credits shows a compilation of, I guess, like the filmmaker's favorite scenes.
Yeah.
I've never seen that. I thought we were watching a gag reel at first and we were going to, like, okay, like, you know, they're going to break character. No, it's just like,
it's a recap of the movie.
It's a recap of the movie. I've never seen that.
And it's not like they're showing like a scene of each character, then it says their name as a credit or
it's
something.
It's
not that.
Not the victory lap.
You just get a scroll of the credits overlaid with the best scenes of the movie. It's like, hey guys, remember when you saw this part? Yeah, that was cool.
Exactly.
What about this part? Yeah, I like that part.
Wasn't that awesome?
Yeah. And that's the movie.
Yes.
Anything we missed, Dave?
Well, I guess it's going to be kind of a new segment on the show. I'm going to talk a lot about characters' clothing because I'm starting to notice it for some reason now. But like Freddy, Tom Matthews' character, he's got a pillbox hat on, and he's got a rat tail, and he's wearing unnecessary suspenders, just like Marty McFly.
Yeah, yeah.
I kind of wish this would come back because I think it's a nice look. And it's probably better than a belt, you know, to wear suspenders with your jeans.
Well, that fits in with the crew he's in. Like, the mod scene back then was all like that. Like, I wore suspenders sometimes when I was in my ska phase, you know?
Oh, okay. Well, of course, yes.
The ska phase everyone hates.
Right.
But I do love ska music still. Yeah, but nice. Anyway.
And the other thing with Klug Gulager, if you watch Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, Quentin Tarantino's most recent film, he's in the movie. And Leonardo DiCaprio's character, Rick Dalton, is semi-based on him.
Okay.
Like, he's like that character is based on, like, kind of a you know, several different actors, but Klug Gulager was one of the inspirations for him. This guy who was in a cowboy show, who was trying to make it in the movies.
Yeah.
And like kind of made it, but didn't, you know, like just didn't get the breaks that he needed. Quentin Tarantino was a big fan of his. And so, Once Upon a Time in Hollywood is kind of about, you know, his story.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Awesome. And one, we didn't really touch on it much, but I think the movie itself builds really well.
Yes.
Like the pacing is excellent. We kind of just jumping all over the place on the podcast and it's frenetic, but like, it sounds like it's just one, all right, this scene, that scene, this scene, zombie movie. No, it like really builds the tension. It builds the setting and escalates like very appropriately.
Agreed.
It doesn't just like spike at one point or anything like that. There's no down moments like near the end. Like it builds perfectly and comes to a great climax.
Yeah, it's really well paced. You're right.
Yeah. So not only a fun time, but I think it's a great technical movie.
Yes, agreed.
Everything about it is pretty awesome.
Yep.
All right. So would you recommend it?
Yes, I would. This is a lot of fun and everybody should see it. It's a great time.
Yeah, watch this one on Halloween night, everybody. Or watch it tonight. Just watch it now.
Exactly. Just watch it throughout the spooky season.
Yeah. And then watch it again in April, you know, just because it's that good.
Of course. Yeah, exactly. It's always
watch it on Easter.
There you go.
You know, you rise back from the dead.
I would. Fine, I'd watch it on Easter.
It
of course
fits,
you would.
Right?
Yes.
It's a Catholic movie, everybody. Anyway. But we'll we both recommend it, right?
Yes.
All right, so that wraps it up. If you like what you heard, please subscribe to the show anywhere you get your podcast. Rate it, review it, and most of all, share it. It gets more dudes listening to the dudes. And you can go to dudesonmovies.com and find anything you need right there.
Yep, and we're on Facebook, Blue Sky, and Instagram. Look for Dudes on Movies. And our email address is dudesonmovies@gmail.com.
That's right. And Dave, we have a question of the week. What's the question of the week?
What are the funniest horror films?
It's a good one. Mm-hmm. Call the voicemail 628-400-DUDE, that's 628-400-3833, and let us know. And stay tuned when we end Horror Month, Dave, with 1933's The Invisible Man, directed by James Whale and starring Claude Rains and Gloria Stewart. So until next week, I'm your dude, Scott.
I'm your dude, Dave.
And we'll see you next time.